Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. On this show, we have the privilege to speak with leaders and entrepreneurs in their fields, from the arts to science to government to athletics. And there's a common thread, a certain spirit, even at a young age, that all of these people have to build things, to start something new, to change the status quo.
I've always had the bug, you know, whether it was mowing all my neighbor's lawns when I was, you know, in middle school or other things growing up. I've always kind of had that bug. And yeah, I guess I still do.
Well, this is Dani Ryland. And at just 30 years old, she's the founder and commissioner of the National Women's Hockey League. Before Ryland became a pioneer in women's hockey, she spent time hawking bottled water at Fenway to pay for graduate school and started a coffee shop in New York City. Recently, my colleague, Shira Springer, WBUR's sports and society reporter, sat down with Ryland. She was in town to speak at the Massachusetts Conference for Women. And we're going to play that conversation for you in just a second. But before we do, Shira joins me now in the studio. Shira, it's good to see you.
Great to be here.
It's great to see you in the studio since we bump into each other in the hallway all the time. But anyway, Dani Ryland, sounds like she's had an incredible journey. Tell me more about her.
Yeah, she's the commissioner for the NWHL, and she is charged with coming up and executing the vision for the league. So she's got this great entrepreneurial spirit behind her, and she is just trying to make the best professional women's hockey league possible with really what's limited resources out there, limited sponsorships, and limited money.
And maybe right now limited awareness, right? Because I'm sure a lot of people haven't even heard of the league.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's a four-team league. It started in 2015. They have Olympians like Hillary Knight and Megan Duggan. And they tried to make a big splash with the fact that they pay players. That was a really unique aspect of the league when it started out. But unfortunately, they've made more headlines in recent years for cutting salaries. Last year, they had to reduce player salaries by about 38%, which was a big blow to the league's image.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
And that's
a lot. It's not the only controversy they've had, sadly.
Yeah, there was a Massachusetts businessman named Mike Moran, and he filed a lawsuit seeking the $200,000 that he said he invested in the league. I asked Dani Ryland about that, and she couldn't comment on it.
Okay. But they've done some other more positive things, though.
Yeah, they have. It was the first league to adopt a policy with regard to transgender players. In October 2016, the NWHL became the only professional sports league in North America with an openly transgender player. So that sort of forced the hand of the league, but they dealt with it in a way, you know, where they were open about it and said, yes, we're going to bring you in. We're going to talk about what pronouns you want to use, and we're going to figure out how to do this the best way possible. And that transgender player had a successful season.
Okay. And so this was Dani Ryland's doing? I mean, she's
the
founder.
She's the founder. So this was Dani Ryland's doing. And it was, you know, an obvious decision when it came to the transgender player in many ways. But there are a lot of tougher decisions that she faces. I had a long conversation with her, and I started asking her about the first moment she got this idea to found a women's professional hockey league that paid its players.
I was actually at a beer league tournament up in Lake Placid, New York, with a bunch of girlfriends of my teammates, thinking, you know, I wish there were more opportunities for women to continue their careers after college. And a few Labatt blue lights later, you know, everything was like, all right, I think I'm going to do this. I think this is my next project. This is something I'm passionate about, and I want to figure out how to make this happen.
Okay, so you're
that was the exact moment.
I was going to say, so you had a couple of beers, and you're thinking, I can do this, but it takes a lot to start up a hockey league. What were some of the first steps that you went to? And kind of, it must have been a bit of a crash course. You go from, hey, this is a good idea, to, hey, I'm going to be commissioner of this new women's league. And not only that, you had a really unique ambition for the NWHL. You wanted to pay players. So take us back to that process of bright idea, reality.
An idea is just an idea, and I'm sure I wasn't the first person to have that idea either. As soon as I started to talk about it, everybody was unbelievably supportive. Whatever we can do to help, I can't believe this doesn't exist already. I mean, it was a no-brainer that this was an untapped market and professional women's hockey needed to exist.
Mm-hmm. And let's be clear, when you say professional women's hockey needed to exist, there had been teams and leagues where women could play quote-unquote professionally, but the NWHL was going to be the first league that paid players, that treated them like true professionals.
Yes, and that was part of our ethos, and something that was really important from the jump is to set the standard that, you know, the women need to be paid for their time that they're spending on the ice.
What was the best advice you received in that startup process as you were preparing to launch, and who gave it to you?
Oh, goodness. There was so much advice that comes in. I think that's one of the struggles of being a startup and being a young woman, really. When you want to do something, it's like unsolicited advice comes flowing in, and it's kind of being selective as to who you take that advice from. And that was some of the best advice I received, was be selective with who is going to help you control your messaging and kind of funnel that advice accordingly.
You know, the NHL has all these sponsors and all this money behind it, and the players make millions upon millions of dollars, and you've got basically Dunkin' Donuts backing you. And I remember the announcement when, you know, Dunkin' Donuts signed on, and I think there was the hope that more sponsors would follow and there'd sort of be something of a flood of sponsors that would say, if Dunkin' Donuts sees value in this, we do too. That hasn't exactly been the case. What has that been like, sort of the struggles in trying to gain financial support for this league so you can stay with your model of paying players?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a struggle, and having the confidence to fail and hear no so many times and still wake up the next morning, go to the next sponsorship meeting and ask again, it's definitely been a struggle. But I think that's what you need as an entrepreneur, is that grit and that perseverance and to be bold and have the confidence to keep asking. And we're starting to string together a couple of wins. We are getting more yeses. And, one of the biggest struggles for women's sports is that there's this narrative that kind of looms over the sport, saying, you know, when are they going to fail? Women's sports, there's no fan base. And all of these storylines that just aren't necessarily true, but sit in the hands of C-suite execs who are making decisions with how they're spending their marketing dollars. And so to find progressive brands like Dunkin' Donuts who see the value in what we're creating both on and off the ice, which is, girls can have the same exact dream as their brothers.
So though, how do you, that's one, I can see, with Dunkin' Donuts, you have a start in counteracting that narrative. But bigger picture, how do you counteract that narrative of when are they going to fail? Because that is so prevalent. And it must be particularly difficult because in October, you had to reduce the salaries of NWHL players. And so, now players receive $5,000 to $7,000 down from the $10,000 to $26,000 they were offered in season one. So I'm wondering how you counteract that narrative and still figure out a business model that can work.
Yeah, and we've kind of been doing both in parallel. Being a startup, you have to make adjustments. Even being in the sports industry, there are challenges that you have to face. And really the only thing that didn't change between season one and season two was our player salaries. So having those adjusted has given us the stability to continue. And we believed, as well as our players believed, that existing was more important. And so we kind of all doubled down on that. And I mean, my heart was hurting for quite a few months during the announcement of, our player salary cuts last season. And the players were, it was admirable how the players responded. And they said, Danny, we're behind you. We support you. And we understand that it's not just about our generation. It's about the next generation and what we're doing to inspire girls to continue to play and stay in the games.
One of the kind of controversial points is that the players have wanted more transparency about how things are run in the league. And I guess, what do you say to people who, to players in particular, who are asking you for more transparency about league structure and league leadership? That they, when you reduce salaries, what's behind that? What do you say to players who are looking for more transparency?
Last year when that did happen, I spoke to every single team, gave them as much transparency, answered every single question, spent hours with the leaders of each team, making sure that they were in the know, because it was so important that they understood why we were in the position that we were in and where we needed to grow together. So, as soon as there was a demand for transparency, there was transparency given. And we've been working very closely with the NWHL Players Association throughout the off season to keep that going.
The NWHL also has a unique mission in that when you go to your site, You say that the league is built on social values, right? So there's equality, and it's the belief that every girl can dream just as big as her brother. There's empowerment, where you have great role models deserve the biggest stage. And there's inclusiveness. If you can play, you can play. And that's part of the big mission of your league. Why is all of that important to you? Why is that social mission important to you?
I mean, that is exactly what we're built on. And we've been fortunate that we can use sport as a platform to really tackle larger issues in society as well. So the league's mission, it's really from the players. This is their mission as well.
So I'm wondering, how do you balance that support of social values and wanting to be something more than just a hockey league that pays women players and be an actual quality hockey league with quality play?
Yeah, I mean, that's the easiest part.
There
are 180 women graduating from Division I programs every year. We only have four teams, so it's not like we're looking for, you know, thousands of roster spots. I mean, the best of the best really do present themselves. And, you know, hockey is such a strong part of any player's identity that they want to continue to play. The quality of play in women's hockey in general has developed so much over the last couple of years. Any fan of hockey can really enjoy. I mean, it's fast, it's physical. The women's game, I mean, they're so cerebral. They're so smart out there. They're making plays. When you watch, if you talk to someone if it's their first time going to a game, they're always impressed with the speed and just the execution. It's a very clean game.
So you have this broadcast quality play. You have great players, including many Olympians in your league. What is it going to take to bring women's hockey more into the mainstream? I've always wondered that. What can people do? What can you do as an entrepreneur, as a league commissioner, to get people more interested and build that fan base?
Yeah, I mean, we're doing it every day, driving the attention through social. And really, the opportunities on the biggest stage, like the Olympics, will come back and help the league as well. I think the biggest thing is patience. You know, having the patience is, you know, a year or two, a long time to really see women's hockey take that next step, to start thinking about expansion, to start thinking about a broadcast deal with a linear broadcast network. You know, what is that next step? And we're starting to ask those questions and line those things up ourselves.
Wow, so you're starting to ask about expansion, taking it beyond the current four teams?
Yes, we're starting to narrow it down and look at a few potential expansion markets.
It's the 100th anniversary of the NHL. They started out with just four teams. You have four teams. The Connecticut Whale, which I love because you play the Brass Bonanza
Yes. Every
time goals are scored, and that's such a classic hockey song. There's the Boston Pride, the Buffalo Buttes, and the Metropolitan Riveters. What do you see as the future?
Yeah, I mean,
people going to be talking about it 100 years from now?
Oh, definitely. I definitely won't be in charge 100 years from now, but the league will exist. And that is, you know, obviously there are a lot of steps between now and 100 years from now, but we're evolving quickly and we're taking those steps and making those strides. And I think it'll be exciting to see the energy that exists around the Olympics and how that translates back to the NWHL. And when those players come back and hopefully with gold medals around their necks, we can kind of leverage that love of the game that exists after the Olympics.
Tell me a little bit about your hockey playing career. I mean, when did you start playing hockey? I understand you grew up in Florida, so that's not exactly the typical place to develop a passion for ice hockey.
Yeah, I started skating back in 1992, which was the Lightning's inaugural season. And actually, Manon Raume was in net for a preseason game or two down in Tampa, and she was my inspiration.
She was a goalie, though.
She was a goalie, and I was pretty confident that I was going to be the first defenseman on the Tampa Bay Lightning. But so I started skating then with my two brothers, fell in love with the game, and found myself actually finishing my career here in Boston at Northeastern University.
It's an interesting journey, though, how you got to the Northeastern women's hockey team. You were a graduate student on the college hockey team.
I was. So the only record I held was actually being the oldest woman in the NCAA. I found myself at Northeastern with 2 years of eligibility left and played my 2 years out there. And we actually won the Bean Pot my last season. So that was an exciting moment. And, my dad came up for that game. And it's definitely a memory that I'll have forever.
So you have this college background in Boston with Northeastern. Was it a no-brainer to put one of the original four franchises in the Boston area?
Oh, for sure. I mean, Boston is a hockey town. It's a sports town. And so it would it was definitely a no-brainer to put a team here.
And what is it that you absolutely love about ice hockey?
I mean, it's the greatest game on earth. There are so many intangibles that are involved in the game. My favorite part of being a player was definitely the locker room and having teammates around me. And, you know, those are your best friends. That's your family. So that was definitely my favorite part of being a player. And now it's just the finesse and the speed and the game itself, which is just so easy to fall in love with.
That was Dani Rylan. She's founder and commissioner of the National Women's Hockey League. She was in town last week to speak at the Massachusetts Conference for Women. She spoke with WBUR Sports and Society reporter Shira Springer. And by the way, you can see the Boston National Women's Hockey team, the Boston Pride. They'll play at the Warrior Ice Arena in Boston this Saturday. We've got more information about that at our website, RadioBoston.org. Our show is produced by Kathleen McNerney, Jamie Bologna, and Allison Bruzek. We had help from Cassandra Sunt and Lily Tyson. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.